Hello, ladies. Welcome to Women Words Wisdom, which is a podcast for women over 50 who want to challenge cultural narratives surrounding aging. Let's recognize and celebrate the raw truth behind what we wise women are learning and experiencing. My name is Robin Enright Salcedo, and I'm your host for the podcast. I believe we have a choice in how we face our aging. We can look at it with dread, or we can look at it with curiosity. If you believe that 60 is the new 40, this isn't the right podcast for you. Let's face this head on, and let's talk about the real issues. Let's find a way through it together. In 2010, I began what I thought at the time was my greatest life adventure, a move from Massachusetts to Boulder, Colorado at the age of 51. I loaded up my Subaru, bought my cockapoo, Tigger, a booster seat so he could see out the window, and I pointed my car west to begin my new life. While this was indeed a great life adventure, I've realized that the greatest adventure of my life was something I missed beginning altogether. My journey into older age and the many new doors that opened and new chapters that began. And while my drive to Colorado was meticulously mapped out, this adventure has not been. I'm a storyteller who uses the written word and photography to provide a glimpse of my subjects, so why not create a project that focuses on all the ways we end and begin again during this life phase? So I'm curious, who are you? What are you working on? Who and what inspires you? What royally pisses you off? What new chapters have you begun? I promise to be real with you. No bullshit. It's kind of scary, to be honest, but since I've always made sense of the universe through writing and allowing myself to be vulnerable, I guess I'm willing to risk it. Okay. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Women Words Wisdom Conversations, episodes that feature interviews with women I consider fascinating, inspiring, and who I think are women you just need to know about. Today, I am so excited to be chatting with Shannon Page Kenny. Shannon is an author, TEDx speaker, teacher, and mentor of yoga teachers around the world. She infuses her bodies of work, yoga classes, teacher trainings, webinars, and talks with a fullness of artful living and passion for life and experiences on and off the yoga mat. Shannon is described by many as confidently vulnerable, and as a result is one who inspires positive change in the lives of others. Off the mat, she loves to chef, wake surf, run, and feed the squirrels. She is a loving wife and dog mama based out of Lafayette, Colorado, from her home studio, Earth Studio. I decided I wanted to talk to Shannon after a Facebook post she made regarding failure, but I'll let her tell you that story. So let's begin the conversation. How are you, Shannon?
I am great. Thank you for having me, Robin.
I'm so excited.
Thank you for having Willie. This is Willie.
Hi, Willie. For those of you who can't see Willie, he's the cutest. What kind of dog is he? A dachshund?
He's a miniature pincher, and he thinks he's 6 feet tall. He has no idea he's actually a miniature anything. And he thinks he is an enormous animal.
He is right now kissing his mama.
Yeah, he is.
This is so wonderful.
Yeah, there's no getting around any webinar without animals. There just is not. They're a constant in our life.
Well, and as Shannon told me, she has two little dogs right now. So yeah. Tell me about that. The fact that your husband, but when you, he wasn't your husband, obviously, when you met him.
Well, he was quite soon after.
So tell me that story.
The dog story of how we have got both. Okay. So Isis is my little dog, and she started her journey with me 11 years ago. When I went to go assist my teacher, Sheba Ray, in San Francisco, in the Castro, and we had a break. And so me and one of my very best friends, Daphne Larkin, and her husband at the time, Tom Larkin, were taking a break up a hill, walking up to get like a $90 smoothie. And and there was this ASPCA stand out in front of Wells Fargo. And I said, whatever you do, don't let me go down that side of the street because I'll end up walking home with a dog. Lo and behold, on our way back, I couldn't help but see this sweet little dog being held by this man who was talking with the lady who was running the show. And he said, I'm homeless, but I'm sure I'll find a couch soon. How can I take the dog today? And I just remember this like feeling in my gut of, you can't be homeless with my dog. Yeah. And so I said, can I hold your dog? And he said, sure. And he got distracted and was looking at something else. And I turned to the lady with the clipboard and I said, do I have to live in California to buy this dog or to adopt this dog? And she said, nope. And I adopted Isis on the spot. And I didn't think it through, obviously. So that evening, actually, I had dinner with the editor of Yoga Journal and Gary Krafsow. And so here we are sitting in the, and the head of Yoga Journal events. And we're sitting in this 4-star restaurant, and this little dog would not let me leave her anywhere. And so I just, what do women in California do? They put dogs in purses. So I had this little infant, tiny little palm sized dog in my pocket, in my purse, my pocketbook. And through the whole night, we just passed the dog back and forth. And at one point, one of the people we were with dropped Isis's chew toy, and the waiter picked it up and he said, you dropped this. And she goes, oh, my earring. And it was this chew toy. And it was so funny. So I'll never forget that. But then when we fast forward, the night that I met my husband, which was completely unplanned, I'd taught 2 yoga classes, taken a Pure Barre class. And then one of my friends who recognized that I was going through really deep depression after my father died said, why don't we meet just a girls' night, you, me, and the girls for a beer? And I was living at the Peloton in Boulder, and there was Basta downstairs. Mm-hmm. And so I went down, I usually text now. Like, if you know me, you know that I'm really, like, I'm super shy and I love to be at home. Like, I was built for COVID-19 quarantine orders. I was like, I've been training for this my whole life. So I did text Mia back, okay. And I reluctantly went downstairs. I put on a hat and this jean jacket and went downstairs. And there was a man walking with my sweet friend Mia from Basta across the street, putting her massage table into the back of his car. And my first instinct was, Mia, I'm so proud of you. He has a car. But I recognized that I was like, he might be a little bit too old for her, but he's so cute. And he turned to me and he said, oh, you're Shannon. I'm Mia's minion. And I was like, oh, and he's got a sense of humor. And so we got back into Basta and I saw him move his jacket and to the seat that was across from mine. And apparently there were other people in the restaurant that night, but I only saw him. And we had this conversation that just wouldn't stop. And it was so sweet and beautiful. And then after the restaurant closed, we went upstairs to, I was going to let Mia borrow my car to go home. And so there, all of us were sitting around my living room. And the reason why Jeffrey was there was his daughter, he has struggled with addiction her whole adult life and her whole teen to adult life. And he was trying to put her into a rehab and it did not go well that day. And so we're sitting upstairs in my loft and I see his phone ring and he shows it to me and it's her. And I said, well, you need to take that call. So he went into one of the other rooms in my apartment and took the call, came out visibly crying. He said, she's in trouble. I need to go get her. And so I was like, well, I'm coming with you. And I grabbed Isis. Like, it was the strangest, weirdest, knee-jerk impulse. And so I grab my dog, get in his car. We zoom all the way across Denver to rescue his daughter. We get to this, which I can only describe as the scariest home I've ever been to in my life. And I walked into the house and downstairs, and I could not believe that I was in this place so dangerous and so scary, and that she would put herself in this type of harm's way. And I felt that Mommy Durga piece of me bubble up. And I introduced myself because I was like, I'm Shannon Page and I'm on a date with your dad right now. And we're not staying here. And she was like, you're a therapist and you're just trying to get me to go into therapy. And I remember very clearly, I said, no, girl, I'm on a date with your dad. And right now you're stepping on my game in the car. And so she was like, okay, give me 10 minutes. And I went upstairs and like left that house, found Jeff again, who's talking in the driveway to a man who is like wearing a Sons of Silence jacket, which I had to Google the next day. And that was scary. And I said, well, she'll be up in 10 minutes. And Jeff was like, she's not going to be up in 10 minutes. I don't know what we're going to do here. She was up in 10 minutes.
Wow.
Got in the car. We drove away. And as we're driving home, we got closer and closer to the exit of where we're going to have to make a decision of, you know, do we drop Shannon off and Isis off? And she said, so are you going to be able to stay at the house tonight? And I was like, what do you mean? And she was like, well, I don't know if I want to go home yet. And I was like, well, if you want to go to my loft, you can stay for one night, but one night only. And she said, well, what if I do want to go home? Will you come stay there? And Jeff said, I'll be a perfect gentleman. I have a guest room. And so we came here. He was right. He was a perfect gentleman. And the next morning and through the whole next weekend, we ended up just kind of sitting on his daughter. And 2 days later, I was like, well, if I'm going to stay for another night, I need to go home and get more clothes. And he was like, well, why don't you go home and get all your clothes? And wow. So I did.
Wow.
And 5 days later, he asked me to marry him. And I swear that night, Isis and Willie just completely fell in love. And they've never been separated a day since then, except for one time when Isis was at the vet.
This is like a magical fairy tale.
Yeah, I just think women out there just don't give up, because, you know, the love is really, it took me 3 marriages to get it right. So
I'm with you, sister.
Keep trying until you get it right. Keep going.
I think the coolest thing about that story too, I know this is probably, we didn't even talk about going this direction in our conversation, but I think what's really wonderful about that is you weren't actually out looking for somebody.
No,
and I think, and sometimes I think women any age don't understand how, because I was the same way with my husband. I was not looking. In fact, I really was not looking.
I had completely sworn men off at that point in time.
And how long have you been married now?
We will be married 2 years this June, but we will be together 5. We're actually, we just celebrated the 20th was our anniversary of the 5th year of us meeting.
Well, for listeners, I can attest to the fact that I remember on Facebook, our lovely communication tool that I have a love-hate relationship
Me
with.
Me too.
But Shannon exuded happiness and glowed through the screen when you met Jeff. And I was really happy to hear that. So,
well, he came in. It's like, it's so funny how we do meet human angels, I think. And they... You know, they can't, or even canine angels or squirrel angels, but we meet angels all the time. And if we allow them to shift us, they will. And he definitely shifted me. He's been one of the greatest sources of inspiration in my life. Jeffrey is unique. I swear I'm married to a leprechaun. He constantly sees the good in everything. He is, in fact, the earth of my life. And he's always happy. It's like almost irritating sometimes because he is just unbelievably happy. He's just like, well, why be sad when you can be happy? And that's very different than me, because I've struggled with depression and anxiety my whole life. And when I met him, I was deep down that rabbit hole of darkness. I was living at the Peloton, but make no mistake, please do not imagine some gorgeous like loft with full of sunshine. It was full of all my things. It was definitely home, but it had one window and one door and a tiny little patio that was near the one window. And it was a concrete bunker of emotional dysfunction. And it was so sad. And it was where I lived when my father died. And this was the point in time where, when Mia finally intervened, because she's an angel too, I was going to bed at about 3:30 in the morning and barely waking up in time to teach my class and coming back and going to bed in the middle of the afternoon and then getting up and staying up all night, watching movies, doing anything I could do to just navigate the moments. And I was just making it through day by day by day. That's why I'm so sensitive to people and mental illness right now during COVID-19, because I know what it feels like to be isolated. And I did that to myself, and I did not have quarantine orders. So I can imagine what it felt like for people to be told they have to stay there, because my emotions just told me, just lock yourself in.
How does jumping around a little bit, you know, the isolation, you know, I'm like you in the sense that I was built for quarantine. I mean, I'm very happy staying at home. I miss my children, but that's because they're in the Boston area. I mean, I feel very like, oh, I don't like what's going on in the world, but I feel absolutely delighted that I get to pay attention to all the things I love. But I also suffer from anxiety and periodic depression. And I know what you're talking about. I too feel very sensitive towards people. I think we may have talked about this a little bit. One of the things that, you know, with all of this quarantining, we didn't really address until now. It seems like more recently, people are starting to talk about the mental health issues that are arising out of this. We're very quick to poo-poo. Oh, it's easy. All you have to do is stay home. But for some people, staying home isn't. You know, you and I might be the isolating types, but for other people, it's not really healthy. So I'm curious about how, you know, obviously I know Jeff helped you. You have a yoga practice. Tell me something about how yoga, what has yoga done for you during this time, during that time when you were feeling very isolated and very depressed? I just would like to know your personal journey as it relates to yoga.
There were two sharp differences that I can say between that time and this time, because that period of my life, that also coincided with the close of my original yoga studio, Om Time, which happened after a really long tumble fall from the economic collapse of 2008. We finally closed after the lion's floods in 2013, and that dovetailed right off the end of my divorce. And then my getting into a relationship with somebody who's very emotionally a poor choice for me. And that at the end of that relationship, when, you know, he told me I was just worthless so many times that I believed it. And for the year after that, that was when my father died. And so that all compounded, and I had so much fear and shame and doubt and frustration and anxious depression that I wasn't practicing. It would have been amazing if I had, and I was still teaching yoga. So, you know, there's probably a lot of yoga teachers out on the broadcast right now that feel that, like, you know, that imposter syndrome when you're not practicing as much as you think you should be, or as much as you think your students think you are. And then who are you to say anything? I was not practicing at all. So I was navigating that yucky, icky imposter situation. I was hearing all the stories and rumors being told about me, and I'm sure I was making some of them up myself. But this COVID, the difference is that we closed on March 16th, and thank you to a software company called Tula, who we use to navigate our registration. They went seamless 2 days before of, this is your view broadcast button. Get onto Zoom, click it in here. And on March 16th, I went on my very first Zoom broadcast for the studio, and it was attended by 45 people, wow, which was hilarious. And it was my Zoom skill set was so bad that it was done in silhouette and the sound was so terrible, but people stuck with it. And every day, like, people were like, oh, please keep doing it. Please keep doing it. And I recognized at that moment that it might help save my life, because I definitely saw the writing on the wall. Like, this could close my business. This could destroy me again. And then what is going to be my relationship with yoga going forward? Because I've already thrown yoga underneath the bus once. Mm-hmm. And I love my studio and I love my students. And through this whole COVID experience, I've taught every day something for the studio, for classes, and I've retooled all our trainings, and I teach something free every day. And so it's getting me out of bed. Mm-hmm. And I just think that right now people are having a hard enough time to get out of bed. So I'm getting out of bed, not just for myself, but I'm getting out of bed for my students who are now all around the world. Like, who knew that this would open up something so special that would allow the conversation to expand? And like, I spend the rest of the day fielding emails of those of us that are struggling. And we've had several members of our community run out of food. Mm-hmm. And because we have such a big community, we've been able to say on the broadcast that morning, listen, the local food banks are low on food, and a mother of two boys waited in line for 5 hours only to be turned away. And she messaged me one morning and said, I know that this particular class is not free, but can I come clean the studio and in trade? And I was like, and she told me the story. I was like, I'll give you a free pass, no problem. All the free passes. And we raised $1,000 in food money that day in one day to help feed several people on our broadcast who are struggling. And so I know a lot of people are deeply struggling, but I do believe in movement. And I've seen how I've let a lack of movement and sitting down, like, and just sitting in front of Netflix, that doesn't help me. And I also am not saying that, oh, every day, make sure you get up and hot iron your hair and, you know, craft something and then make sure that you bake something. Cause, you know, there are good days and there are bad days in this. And there's so much more reflection because there's so much more amplification around we're all in this. Like, you can't think I'm the only one who's going through this because it's affecting us all. And I read a poem one day about, and I'll send it to you, about how we're not all in the same ship, but we are in the same storm. And so it's really hard to say that, you know, this is the perfect recipe, because I'm not going to say that yoga is going to fix everything, because it can't. It can't fix a broken heart. I tried. But it can help make us show up and be accountable to something. So I'm grateful for the opportunity to be able to practice with everybody on the inner tubes all day. And now I even have a fancy little lighting situation going on and a wireless mic, and I'm so fancy now.
Yeah. Well, it's so funny. I mean, first, before I ask you to say the next thing, Shannon and I were really excited that we did our hair today.
I did do my hair. So when I laugh about, like, make sure you hot iron your hair every day, this is not an everyday
current. I think it's, you know, that's one thing about this COVID experience too. I not only don't know what day it is half the time, I don't know what month.
That happened to me last week.
I don't even know. I have to, oh yeah, it's already May. And I've actually recently just started making more of an effort to wash my hair every day. That was the baby steps. At first, like you said, you realize what's serving you and what is not. But it's striking me as I listen to you talk, and I don't know, I'm curious to know what you think about this. In some ways, I know, you know, and I met you first at Om Time. You didn't really meet me, but I met you and I was totally infatuated. I felt like I'd been waiting for you to teach me a class my entire life in yoga. And I've been practicing yoga for a very long time. And as we talked earlier, you had said something to me that just, I needed to hear it at that exact moment. And it was the most bizarre thing. You said something about the demons. We only know our own demons. We only know what it is that's keeping us from, I don't even remember all the words, to be funny. I mean, which I think is kind of funny because it was, I mean, I walked out of there in tears. But I felt something so strong. So to me, and I didn't know a lot about what was happening with your business. I was new to Boulder. I had just moved to Boulder. All I knew was that I thought I found this enchanted yoga teacher. And I want to talk about two things that are related to this. One is that I wonder sometimes, because I'm listening to you talk now about your experience today, if in fact the experience of losing Om Time isn't what has made you more determined and more able to show up and meet the challenges of today, because you know what it's like to lose that one thing. So it almost seems to me like you had no choice in this particular period of time. But there's something, so I'd like to know what you think about that. I don't necessarily like to always talk about, you know, everything. I mean, I do believe everything brings us to the moment we're meant to get to. I am very careful when I say that, because especially when someone's in the midst of hell, it just doesn't feel good to hear that. That's just been my personal experience. But I think there's something you're touching upon that I think is really important for people to hear. And that is, you are magical when you teach. I've experienced it. I know I'm not the only person. And it is because you're real, you're raw, you're vulnerable. But you said something too that I think people need to hear. And that is that you're in it with everybody. Just because you're a yoga teacher and you're bringing us all these beautiful gifts, it doesn't mean that you also need some beautiful gifts, that you also, you know, you're in it. You're in it with all of us. And you said something about that when you and I chatted. So I'm curious to hear from you what you think that period of time, which was so painful for you, how it is feeding you or not today. And also, what is it like? I mean, tell me more about what it's like to be maybe held on a pedestal when I know you don't want to be held on a pedestal as a human being, you know? So I'd like to hear you speak to that a little bit.
Well, those are such really interesting questions. And I will say that I call it unicorn teaching. Like, you know, the perfect yoga teacher doesn't do us any favors. And I learned that lesson perhaps, like I've tried to always be real, but, youth is interesting. We make mistakes that obviously you wouldn't make in hindsight. And I don't know that I opened up as much about like the pain that went on with own time and a really significant amount of adult bullying that went on in our company that was like left me just really terrified and like physically shaking every day. And so I think I tried to like never let them see you sweat kind of mentality. And now I don't do that. And to be absolutely honest, when I closed Own Time, I still had a teacher training that I needed to finish with people. And I am the type of person that will complete something, even if I feel ashamed for failing. And so I had, you know, I think it was 12 people that were like halfway through or even only just a quarter through because I have a rolling program. And so I navigated coming back into teaching with just a certain persistence of, I've got to keep this going just long enough to get these people through. And then I'll figure out what's next because this is obviously over. I have fallen from grace. And when fall from grace, it's like at the same time that I closed my restaurant and people got projected a lot, or I closed my studio, two of my best friends closed the restaurant and nobody said anything. Nobody said anything about them. They walked away from a lease. They walked away from massive amounts of debt. They walked away from the food purveyors they owed money to, the liquor distributors. And I felt that me as a person, I got held to a standard that was, how dare you close my home and you owe me $50 for a punch card. And it was, every day was sort of a new fresh hell. And I went through the fresh hell and navigated all the legal obstacles and the things that people were saying about me, like, don't trust her because she closed her business. Like, how can you possibly trust her? And I just focused on getting these people done. But as I was just getting these people done, I was crying in class. Like, I wasn't able to, like, I was reading poetry and writing poetry and stories and in such a way that I was, the real me was like starting to leak out and it was terrified and it was shaking. And through that, it was the broken bits of us actually, I think, is celebrated to a level that we're not comfortable with even letting that happen. Like, why would we even try letting somebody see that, like, you're a massive failure in this moment, but you're keeping going and just like put one foot in front of the other because you keeping going helps me keep going. And so it even makes me like misty to think about and look, go back to that time because it was just so powerful to have people that I didn't know just still write me emails or come up to me after class and say, you keep me going. And I know that you're hurting a lot. And if you ever need anything, and it was like these strangers reaching out to me where I'd felt I needed to hold everybody's poop in a pile. But we are who we are because of everything we've been through, not in spite of it. Like all of your dents and your dings and your cellulite and your gray hair and all of the bumps and all the memories and all of the magic that didn't happen. Like that's what makes us real. And that's what people really want to connect with. Mm-hmm. People are like, oh, well, you've done a TED talk. But if you knew what happened 5 minutes before that TED talk, you will go back and look at it so differently because you will see how scared I was. These are the two things that happened. Well, three things that happened. I walked up to the stage and the guy mic'd me from behind. He mics me and everything. He walks away. And I can't remember what the opening words of my speech were. In that moment, the mic goes on and my brain completely emptied. I was like, are you kidding me? And then that moment, while I'm starting to panic, I'm not kidding, my top, which was tied behind my neck, fell to my waist. So you know that moment where you're like, I'm going to be naked on stage. I was just naked backstage. So I'm like tying that thing in like a Texas death knot back behind my neck. And I'm about to go on. I'm like, now I'm like, they're like, Shannon, here's your 3 minutes. And I like, I've got 3 minutes. I was just naked. I can't remember the first words. I walk out onto that stage and who's the first person I see sitting in the front row next to my mother, who is the most important person to me on the planet, was my ex-husband. And I just like, if you watch the TEDx again, like you will see me see my mom and you will see my face fall, because how could he be there on that day when, I mean, we were friendly, but I was not the appropriate place to be in the front row. Mm-hmm. And I didn't give the TEDx that I planned. I wrote a 9-minute TEDx and I spoke for 16 minutes about something completely real and honest and broken. And it held everything in it that was real in my heart at the moment. And I hope everybody remembers that, because now every day I remember these 5 things. Number one, in COVID, this is so important. Number one, what have you stopped doing by force or by choice? Number two, what have you started doing? Number three, what are you doing to be of service to your greater community? Number four, what are you doing to be great of service in your home, which is an interesting one. And then number five is, what are you overcoming? And I can pin these questions all the way back now. I wish I'd have had them then, because I think they would have helped me progress in the day-to-day then. But then I just kept going. And I think what I speak to now, why you say that, you know, it's magical, it's that I'm not trying to make it magical. I'm not trying to be like, it is so good. Everything is so beautiful. Like, did everybody notice the rainbow on the way in? I imagined it, but I hope you saw it. It's just like, I mean, that teacher just farts glitter and I'm not her. Like, I'm saying nobody knows your demons, because in that moment, like, I'm the only one that knew mine. Mm-hmm. And so I'm trying to just speak, and I try to teach my teachers that are emerging to teach just from what's in their heart, and the rest will take care of itself. Because if we think we're there to do downward facing dog, we're just insane. And we're not there to wear the spandex. Mm-hmm. We're there because that's the only thing that fits by the end of COVID.
I don't even know if mine's going to fit by the end of COVID. You know, you say something that really, that I maybe the real reason I wanted to talk to you really had very little to do with that Facebook post. It's something that I somehow have inferred from just following you. And that has to do with what you just said about what you're trying to teach your yoga teachers and what you learned, you know, crying as you're getting through a teacher training. For me as a human being and as a writer, I'll tell you, whenever I put something out there, sometimes, you know, I'll just write something and send it out there, and I do it and I think, oh shit, I should never have said that. That's the stuff that everybody engages with. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious, you know, I mean, we all have our own perspectives on it. Obviously, it makes us very vulnerable when we let ourselves be seen. But it's also the most rewarding thing in life to be seen and to be heard. And why is it so hard? And especially, I think, even during this time, because what you were saying about the rainbows and the unicorns, why is it so hard for us to be able to sit down on the floor and say, you know what, today I was in a fetal position. And no, I'm not sick. No, my loved one isn't sick. No, I'm just feeling really desperately sad because I can't get in my car and drive to where, or whatever it is, because for each of us, it's different. Mm-hmm. Yeah, for me, it is seeing my children. And I'll be honest, you know, I went to see my kids a few weeks ago and I didn't tell anybody because I was terrified of the judgment. Mm-hmm. And once, like, but then you get over it and you realize, no, people need to hear. People do need to hear that, because especially those of us that do have the, I don't even want to call it struggles, because sometimes I think my anxiety is what makes me someone that I like to share with the world. I don't think it's always a bad thing, but
I agree.
Why do you think it's so hard for so many of us to be real? Why is it that we're so intent upon staring at the rainbow, looking for the unicorn?
Because the shinier objects are easier to follow. And I think there's something that everybody can sort of feel good about in the moment. And shame is an excellent motivator. I'll just say that right now. It's that each of us were kids in some scenario, and we didn't wear the right thing. Mm-hmm. I grew up incredibly poor. I mean, I had like the wrong clothes and lived on the wrong side of the tracks. And once it's pointed out to you once you are told you are not good enough, this is not going to work out for you, better luck next life, you're ugly, you're not talented, you're fat, you're too old. Like, we're told we're too something and we're not enough of something else. And I do believe that it really only takes like one imprint of that as a kid. And you try to avoid that terrible, you know, crying in your mom's arms at the end of the day kind of experience, because it's just so deeply unpleasant. And what is pleasant are sitcoms. What is pleasant are circumstances that are seemingly challenging solved in 30 minutes. Or what is really comfortable is looking at the picture of a supermodel and appreciating perfection. If only I could look like that, if only my skin were like that, if only, you know, I had that haircut, if only if I had those boots, if only I had, and it keeps us chasing something that's outside and inside. Because if we do go inside, it itches, it burns, it probably needs a good nap, it definitely needs a solid bath. It's dented, it has cellulite. I mean, I spend my summer on the boat with my husband and all of our friends, and he'll be like, oh, wear that bikini. And I'm like, are you kidding? That shows all my lumps and all my bumps. And he goes, what bumps? And it's like, we see them, but nobody else sees them. And so we're busy chasing the shiny objects because we can't help but be uncomfortable and trying to cover up our own dents and dings. But it's the dents and dings in other people that we love that the most. Mm-hmm. It's like, I mean, I love my husband because the fact that he does not have a solid relationship with his children makes him the nicest, most amazing human being that he's trying to constantly get into that love. He works so hard to be loved. And we love those dents and dings in other people. People who have fallen flat on their faces, I love them. And when I said that shame is an excellent motivator, it is an excellent motivator until creativity is. So when you said it's super rewarding to put yourself out there, even though you got that fear of judgment, mm-hmm. because you could say, I'm going to get on a plane and go to Boston. That is the dumbest thing I've ever heard anybody would do. Why would you do that? You're going to die. And you're like, of course I'm going to die. Why did I put this on there? And it's like, just stop. Like, literally just tell them, just stop. And it's, Facebook is just, I think even right now, so loud with opinions around, like, you could be like, oh, Jesus Christ walked on water. Did he? Like, somebody would have to argue. And it's like, it can't just be a good story. It has to be verifiable fact, except mm-hmm. the facts don't matter to some people. And it's, I mean, it's like, nobody's really able to live in a place that is in love with the uncertainty. And creativity is uncertain. Mm-hmm. Like my mom's a painter, mm-hmm. and she doesn't struggle sitting there in front of looking at a white canvas. She's like, whoop, and she just does something. She just makes it happen. She just makes it ugly. And I have friends that are writers, and they get up before they have breakfast. They do 45 minutes worth of writing. And I'm like, what'd you come up with this morning? And one of my friends who has written several novels, he was like, the worst shit that has ever been written ever. He's like, I write 75% of crap. 75% of it just doesn't go anywhere. He's like, I'm just exercising my brain. And that's what we're doing when we come to the yoga mat, is we're moving in some way. When I say it's creative, like, you don't have to be an artist, a poet, you have to throw pots to be creative. You're just moving in a different way than you were before. And we have this odd thing, even in yoga, of everybody's looking at me and I'm not doing it right. And my pants are too tight and my ass is too big, my downward dog. is not perfect. And there's no way I'm going to get myself into that pretzely peak pose. And my God, the yoga teacher was just on the cover of a magazine in a handstand in a bikini by a pool. They don't even know that that person was probably airbrushed. But we've got the real practice does occur when you are in child's pose, like, and you're not tired. You're in child's pose because you are, you can't be anywhere else. One of my favorite students said that she sat there on her couch with big fat tears coming down her cheeks, watching the yoga class with a cup of coffee, being like, this is all I can do today. This is all I can do today. And I was like, yeah, love that you're so real that you can talk about that, that it's not a hierarchy of perfection. That's boring. Perfect has perfect nailed. The flaws are what is so awesome. And that's what gets us through. And creativity short circuits fear. So even if you get yourself in front of the Zoom broadcast and you do sit down with a cup of coffee and the puppy dog and you just watch it, that's at least something different than you were doing before. And you are putting yourself out there. But this freedom we have right now to practice at home is pretty cool because you are able to practice in your pajamas and nobody cares what you're wearing. And the truth is when you do get to go back to the yoga studios, my friend, recognize that we are all too self-absorbed to look at you. We are all way too self-absorbed. We are all way too worried about, like, oh my God, did I leave the coffee pot on? Like the thoughts that if we could catalog them of like what people wrestle with in the time and the space in a yoga class, it's impressive how much psychology we're all tangling. So my advice would be creative no matter what you do, even if that means in a moment of frustration, when you would normally sit down and eat a brownie or six brownies, you go for a walk. Or if you're feeling like you're about to go into a spiral of, aloneness that you do, like, there are so many like Zoom collaborative collections, like groups of people that you can get on like group chats with and like get on group calls. We have one through our yoga studio every Wednesday night and you're welcome to jump on with us there. It's this crazy, weird happy hour where we all recognize that we're all struggling. We all thought we were the only one struggling. It's pretty funny. And there are ways to reach out, but that's the scary thing is you have to put yourself out there. You have to do the thing. You have to do the scary thing, the one thing that terrifies you to do. David White has a poem about that. And he's like, take the first step, not the second or the third. Take the first step, the step you don't want to take. And that's what we each have to do. And I'm in it with you. I started the broadcast off this morning with me crying. I had a panic attack in King Soopers this morning because there were two men screaming about how they wouldn't wear masks. And I'd walk past them with my mask on, past all these people wearing masks. And I know the science behind the mask and I understand. And it's sad for me not to be able to see people's smiles. But now I realize how little eye contact we actually did make in the grocery store anyway. And so I was rattled and it was really busy and people were having trouble passing each other. And I just felt myself sweat. And I just felt the difficulty to breathe come up. And I couldn't find the shishito peppers and they still don't have my creamer. And there were all these things. And I was like, I found myself talking to myself out loud, which is always comfortable for everyone around you, of Shannon, just get to the front of the store. You can do this. Just get to the front of the store. You can do this. And I was like, well, with a mask on, they don't even know who's mumbling to themselves. And I checked out and I forgot the one thing that I went to the grocery store to get for my husband. And I got home and I immediately just jumped in the shower and I'm crying and he's worried about me. And he's like, well, what happened? And I was like, nothing, just the regular COVID King Soopers grocery Kroger experience. And then I went to the studio and I had this beautiful theme planned and everything about like, you know, we're all in the swirl and it's going to go up. And I was like, oh man, we're all in the toilet. It feels like it's going down. And I just told the truth. And that's what we need to do right now. Like there's a big call. Tell the truth. Tell the truth, say it fast. Because it hurts right now for everybody.
I think, you know, and I'm actually going to probably end us here because I think that I'm with you 100% on that being the most important thing that we can do for each other is tell the truth. And that story you just told, I had the same thing this Saturday at Farmer's Market. I started to be unable to breathe in my mask.
Yeah.
And had to run out. I'm outdoors. And I had to run out and got home, and I was home for a little while. And then my husband was outside doing some yard work, and I just fell apart. And I had to call him in and say, I need you. And he's like, what happened? And I, same thing. I was like,
everything.
It was just everything. And I can't do this. I can't do this. But of course we can. And I think your point is so well taken. It's like, do that one thing. Stop worrying about what you're going to do 5 weeks from now, a day from now, you know, a year from now. Stop worrying and listening to what life will be like. You know, just tell the truth of where you are today.
And not everybody's going to like you. Like if you put something up on Facebook, somebody's going to have a differing opinion. If you put your art out there, everybody's a critic. It's so easy to listen to the criticism and not listen to the grace, because one person could be like, oh my God, you are the most creative, most abundantly beautiful artist on the entire planet. And we're like, oh no, I'm not. Somebody else is. But the second one person says, you're kind of a hack. You're like, I know, right?
Okay, Shannon, how did you just tap yourself into my own brain?
I don't know, but I will leave you with this, is that one of my good friends, every time somebody says something nice to her, she has the most beautiful response. And I really wish I could be her. Somebody would be like, oh my God, Robin, I love those red headphones. And you're like, I know, you're welcome. And she just says, or I know, thanks. Or I know, right? And it's just, she just grabs the compliment and she takes it in so unabashedly, and I wish I could be her sometimes. So she's just got such good advice.
I think that's a good one. I think all of us could do, especially in these times, do a better job at grabbing that compliment.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful mask. I know, right?
Beautiful earrings, Shannon.
I know. You're welcome. I wore them for you today.
I knew you must have. I have to say...
You can't even see
I actually
them.
Have pants and I have mascara on. I'm very proud of that. These small moments. This has been so wonderful chatting with you, Shannon. I do want everyone who's listening, and you can add onto this. I know you're writing a book.
Yes.
And do you know when your book will be?
I don't have a real good timetable for that, but I don't really have a good timetable, but I will keep you posted.
Okay.
But it'll hopefully be pretty fun. It's got some humor. It's definitely got some universal themes to it. So hopefully it'll be helpful.
And what is the working title?
The working title is Day Drinking with Squirrels.
Okay. I need to know the minute this book comes out, because I'm buying a lot of copies.
I'll keep you posted.
So I know you're doing that. You can find Shannon at earthyogaboulder.com. Is that correct?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And there are many. You're still doing teacher trainings right now, or is that on hold?
Yep, we have still doing teacher trainings, and our teacher training community is all across the world. And so it's really amazing. We interface all of our teacher trainees with a co-mentee, and then you also get somebody who's been through the programming before, and you get a mentor. And so it's just created some lifelong friendships, and to see the level of support and camaraderie, women and beings are so powerful and resilient, and the struggle is real, and they're really working throughout the struggle.
I think, I've known a number of people who have gone through teacher training, and you don't have to do it in order to teach. You do have to do it if you want to teach, but it's just to deep. You can also just deepen your practice.
Absolutely. I never intended to teach a yoga class. I was in control in every other place in my life, running restaurants. And I just took a teacher training to learn a little bit more. And I took my second and my third to do the same. I never intended on teaching yoga professionally.
Well, the world is glad that you did. And I also want to add that if you are interested, if you enjoyed the conversation today, Shannon's classes are available virtually. And I think you can download the recording if you can't be there at the right time.
Absolutely. You don't need to be present to win. And so you just need to sign in. And then I send, if on the Monday, Wednesday, and Friday class, we break down a syllabus of intermediate peak postures. And so there are postures that, like, you don't need to perform the posture, but it's learning the progression up towards it, which is really empowering and teaches you different functions of stabilization, personal empowerment, standing in your own skin, and learning to not be performative. And I send out not only the download for that class each time, but also what we were studying. So when you study it again, because you get to keep the classes forever, if you just keep them all, you could print it out and you'll have a whole manual of practical information. And on Tuesday, Thursday, those classes are all transition based. Everybody cries. I cry today. And then, those are called poetry in motion, and they just kind of help get us emotionally through. And Saturday is myth in motion, where I tell a story from Hindu mythology and weave it through class. And Sunday we lovingly call yoga church. And that is where it's our happy place. And we started calling it that months ago, tongue in cheek, and it's stuck. And so people come from all over the place, and it's just a place to get your grace on.
I love it. I love that term, get your grace on. And I'm not surprised at all. Well, Shannon, it has been such a pleasure. I love you.
I love you more.
I'm so happy. I love you more. I've been so delighted. Thank you so much for joining me today. And I look forward to learning more about where you go in the future.
Oh, thanks. I look forward to following you and keeping track of what you're doing. Congratulations on this podcast. Everybody listen to everything. She is so talented.
Thank you, Shannon.